Good morning. This is Mary Jo Harvey reading The Pantograph, dated Tuesday, June 12th, 2018. The first half of the hour will be reading local news featured in The Pantograph, and the second half hour we will be looking at the obituaries. So to begin with, on the first page of The Pantograph, today, Tuesday, June 12th, we have on the front page, Police Continue Probe into Homicide, written by Kevin Barlow from Bloomington. Bloomington police on Monday identified the victims of a double homicide Sunday morning on the city's east side as they continue to search for whoever shot them to death. Tanisha A. Brown, 20, and Stephen C. Alexander Jr., 18, both of Bloomington, were pronounced dead at 1:17 a.m. Sunday in the 1200 block of Orchard Road, said police spokesman Elias Mendiola. Both had been shot and were found outside an apartment building in what was the second gun-related double homicide this spring in Bloomington Normal. The city has also seen one other homicide and five other gunfire incidents with injuries and/or property damage so far this year. Two other adult victims on Orchard were transported to local hospitals for treatment of gunshot wounds, but their identities and conditions have not been released. An official determination of the cause of death for Brown and Alexander will come after toxicology tests are complete, said police in the McLean County Coroner's Office. A detective could be seen going door-to-door on Monday, as police continue to look for more information in the case. There have been no arrests. Police were called to the scene at 1:09 a.m. after getting several reports of multiple shots being fired in the area. Eyewitnesses reported seeing a vehicle drive away from the scene, but police have not confirmed any details. We know that there was a large gathering at the time this happened, Mendiola said. We are still investigating. I don't know what happened, but I heard gunshots and a car driving off at a high rate of speed, Todd Elliott, who said he lives a couple of blocks away, told The Pantograph on Sunday afternoon. Police continue to ask for the public's help in their investigation. Anyone with information regarding the shooting is asked to contact Detective Paul Swanland, phone 309-434-2373, or Detective Steve Finelli, phone 309-434-2457. If you want to remain anonymous, contact the McLean County Crime Stoppers at 309-828-1111. If your call leads to the arrest and indictment of a suspect, you may be eligible for a reward up to $1,000. The double homicide follows another recently in the Twin Cities. On April 25th, Joseph Gardner, 20, and Reginald Hart, Jr., 19, both of Bloomington, were shot to death in a hallway at Lancaster Heights Apartments at 1444 East College Avenue in Normal. Christopher Harrison, 17, remains in McLean County Jail in lieu of posting $250,000, $35, on six counts of first-degree murder and other weapons and drug charges. He is scheduled in court on June 26th. In Bloomington's other 2018 homicide, Nicole Elbert, 30, was stabbed to death after an apparent domestic dispute February 5th at an apartment at 610 North McLean Street, Monroe. Elbert, age 50, is charged with the murder, but last month a judge ruled him unfit to stand trial. An August 8th hearing is scheduled for a review of the status of the case. The Orchard Road incident was the sixth confirmed shooting in Bloomington so far this year and the second in a week. On June 4th, police reported two 19-year-old men were injured about 1:14 a.m. when the car they were in was shot at near the intersection of Monroe and McLean Streets. Police say one man was injured by gunfire and was transported to a local hospital. A man in the same car also was wounded, but details on how he was injured were not released. No arrests have been made. Around 8:35 p.m. on May 7th, the rear window of a car was shot out by gunfire in the 300 block of Riley Drive. No injuries were reported, but a 16-year-old was apprehended shortly after the incident with a stolen handgun. Police were called to the 2100 and 2200 blocks of Rainbow Avenue at 9:31 p.m. April 4th for a report of gunfire and later found a man had been shot in the leg. A handgun and multiple shell casings were found at the scene. No arrests have been made. On February 20th, police were called to the 900 block of West Olive Street and discovered several rounds had entered a residence. The incident was reported at 3:09 a.m. There were no injuries and no arrests. On February 3rd, a 25-year-old woman reported she, an adult man, and a child were in a parking lot in the 2100 block of North Veterans Parkway when a man approached the vehicle, displayed a handgun, and then shot at the vehicle. The three were not injured. As a result of that incident, Shamari J. Givihan, 21, was arrested and later formally charged with two counts of aggravated discharge of a firearm into an occupied vehicle and possessing a firearm without a proper firearm owner's identification card. He remains in McLean County Jail in lieu of posting $10,035. He is due in court on June 28th. Also on the front page, we have a report. Victim's mother says this was a senseless killing. Family friends gathered to honor victims of Bloomington gunfire. By Roger Miller. Bloomington. With her brother's arm around her shoulder for strength, Angel Hoskins held her emotions in check as she talked about the pain and shock of losing her daughter to gun violence. "My daughter shouldn't be gone. She really shouldn't," Hoskins said of Tanisha A. Brown, 20. "She was really loved. She helped everyone. She helped anyone." Hoskins gathered with about 150 people Monday evening for a vigil at the scene of the shooting that killed Brown and her friend, Stephen C. Alexander, Jr., 18, when they reportedly attended a party early Sunday morning in the 1200 block of Orchard Road, Bloomington. Two other people were wounded, and no arrests were made. Many carried blue and white balloons, some held candles or posters with pictures on them, and others spelled out L.S., for Alexander's nickname, Lil Steve, in tea lights on the ground. Family and friends spoke of two young people who were bright, loving, and looking toward a future that was taken away from them so abruptly. They spoke of frustration at a still unsolved crime and a society that lets such gun violence happen. Hoskins of Dubuque, Iowa, said she talked to her daughter about 10 a.m. Saturday and then got a call from police only a few hours later. Brown and Alexander were pronounced dead at the scene at 1:17 a.m. Sunday. "I got a call 2 hours later. My baby's been shot in the back. Who wants to hear that? What do you mean?" She described how shock gave way to anger. "They have no suspects, no leads, no nothing, and I have to bury my baby," she said. "This was a senseless killing. She's dead. For what?" Brown, who was listed on police reports as living in Bloomington, graduated from Youth Build in the fall and just got her own apartment on Major Street in Normal, family said. She worked at AFNI, but was preparing to go to Heartland Community College in the fall with the ultimate dream of being a pediatrician. "She didn't get to make it," said her aunt, Gaynett Hoskins of Bloomington. "This was a baby. No one deserves to be shot down. Like a dog." Continuing on page 2, when asked to describe her niece, Gaynett Hoskins said, "Her smile, her personality were contagious. It did something to you. You just had to love her. You were family to her." Alexander of Bloomington attended Regional Alternative School in Bloomington and was the father of a 4-month-old girl, friends and relatives said. He loved sports, especially basketball, and to rap. "He lived each day like it was his last," said his aunt, LaPorche McCrae of Bloomington. "He was too young to die or to leave this world. He didn't have a chance to live. Irvina Daniels of Bloomington, a friend of Alexander's family, said he always took care of his mother, who always made sure he went to services at Mount Pisgah Baptist Church. He went home to be with the Lord, she said. They both did. No suspects have been identified and police have not commented on a motive, but many at the vigil spoke of the need to combat gun violence by creating meaningful alternatives and opportunities for youths. Brown's uncle, Mercedes Bird of Bloomington, said Brown and Alexander had gone to the party with a group of friends, not expecting any trouble. They could be anybody's kids, he said. We need to nip this. Kids need to be able to go out and be kids instead of having their years snatched away by someone who wants to be tough. Brown's uncle, Stepney Bones, said the government should spend more money on engaging activities like summer camp and athletics and less on building the new McLean County Jail expansion. In the summer, there is nothing to do, he said. They, youths, stand around. It's hot and muggy. Stuff happens. Police do a lot of arresting and harassing, but there aren't a lot of programs like tutoring, Bird said. Black Lives Matter do a lot, but they can't do it alone. Gaynett Hoskins said the key is building a community. She said she grew up in a rough part of Chicago, but everyone took care of each other and watched out for each other's kids. Today's kids don't have that, she said. They can't make it alone. We have to build a community, she said. We have to put funds where they are needed. Mental health, substance abuse, not jails and coliseums, she said. Beyond that, society has to respect youths and listen to what they say they need, she said. They have their own problems, their own minds. They need resources, and we need to recognize the need. On page 2, more local news by Gregory Pratt from the Chicago Tribune. The title is Illinois GOP Don't Pardon Blagojevich. Illinois Republican congressional delegation signed a letter Monday asking President Donald Trump to leave Democrat Rod Blagojevich's prison sentence intact, saying any clemency for the imprisoned former governor would set a detrimental precedent and damage efforts to combat public corruption. While we understand that, as president, you have the privilege and right under our Constitution to grant pardons and clemency as you determine fit, we ask that you consider very carefully the precedent this may set and the impact it will have on acts of public corruption in the future, the letter said. The letter recounted Illinois' difficult period of public corruption and said Blagojevich's crimes were the pinnacle. It pointed out that Blagojevich's removal from office had overwhelming bipartisan support in the state legislature, and his 14-year prison sentence has been upheld in multiple legal appeals. The evidence against Rod Blagojevich was gathered through the diligent efforts of law enforcement professionals in the Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the letter said. To now excuse him would be demoralizing to those committed agents and officials who work hard every day in Illinois to fight public corruption and defend the rule of law. The letter was signed by U.S. Reps Darren LaHood of Peoria, Rodney Davis of Taylorville, John Shimkus of Collinsville, Peter Roskam of Wheaton, Randy Holtgren of Plano, Adam Kinzinger of Chanahan, and Mike Bost of Murfreesboro. It marks a notable difference between the state's GOP lawmakers and Trump, and comes at a time when Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and the Illinois Republican Party are working to tie Blagojevich to Democratic Governor candidate J.B. Pritzker. Trump last month told reporters on Air Force One that he was considering lessening the 61-year-old Blagojevich's prison sentence, describing it as overly harsh. Blagojevich is not due for release until May 2024. Trump also said he was considering a pardon for Martha Stewart. I'll tell you another one. There's another one that I'm thinking about. Rod Blagojevich, Trump said, according to a pool report. 18 years in jail for being stupid and saying things that every other politician, you know, that many other politicians say. And if you look at what he said something to the effect like, what do I get? Stupid thing to say, but he's sort of saying he's going to make a U.S. senator, which is a very big deal, Trump said. If you read his statement, it was a foolish statement. There was a lot of bravado. Plenty of other politicians have said a lot worse. He shouldn't have been put in jail. There is more local and state news on page 3 of the pantograph. Impact of Salmonella Outbreak Limited by Paul Switch from Bloomington. As the investigation continued Monday into a multi-state salmonella outbreak traced to fresh, pre-cut melons purchased from several grocers, the outbreak appeared to have little impact so far in central Illinois. IDPH, Illinois Department of Public Health, has had 6 cases with 4 hospitalizations and no deaths associated with this outbreak, IDPH Public Information Officer Divya Mohan Little told the pantograph. Cases have occurred statewide, Little said. But representatives of health departments in McLean, Livingston, Logan, Tazewell, Woodford, DeWitt Piatt, Ford, and Macon counties said they have had no confirmed salmonella cases related to the outbreak. At this time, no cases have been identified in McLean County, said Melissa Graven, McLean County Health Department Communicable Disease Supervisor. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention reported Friday afternoon that there have been 60 salmonella cases in 5 states, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Missouri, and Ohio. Originally, Walmart stores were named in the investigation, but over the weekend, additional retailers were named, including Kroger and Walgreens. Cato Foods production facility in Indianapolis was linked by FDA to the outbreak. Kroger's generic label was included in the recall. Eric Halverson, Kroger Company manager of corporate affairs, said, "Our stores in Bloomington, Decatur, and Peoria cut their own fruit, so last week's withdrawal announcement does not apply to your Central Illinois Kroger stores. Where there were questions about the products, though, we removed them from the shelves last week." This recall covered multiple states, but the only Walgreens stores that carried the recalled product were in the Chicago metropolitan area, so Bloomington Normal, Decatur, and other downstate stores were not affected, added Jim Graham, Walgreens Company Media Relations Senior Manager. But Walmart fresh, pre-cut melons sold under the brand name Freshness Guaranteed were affected. As soon as we were notified on Thursday, we promptly pulled the products from store shelves in Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Missouri, and Ohio, and we contacted the supplier in question, Cato Foods LLC, said Molly Blakeman of Walmart Media Relations. Cato Foods, in cooperation with FDA, initiated a voluntary recall of the fruit in question. "No fruit that is on shelves now at Walmart are impacted by this recall," Blakeman said. "Customers that previously purchased products containing fresh, pre-cut melon products at these Walmart stores should not eat them and throw it away. They can also contact their local Walmart for a refund or the supplier at 844-467-7278. The cause of the outbreak has not been determined and the investigation is ongoing, Little said. Most people affected by salmonella develop diarrhea, fever, and abdominal cramps after eating food contaminated by the bacteria. The illness lasts 4 to 7 days. While most people recover without treatment, this outbreak is unusual because there have been more hospitalizations. Commission Gets Name Change by Maria Nagel, Bloomington. The City Council on Monday unanimously approved changing the Cultural District Commission's name to reflect a community-wide perspective. The advisory body will now be called the Bloomington Cultural Commission. "We are very pleased with their support and happy to return Our commission's new mission statement to advocate, educate, and support the arts and culture throughout the city to the benefit of the city as opposed to just the downtown area, Commission Chairman Kelly Williams told the Pantograph after the meeting. Our mission is to make sure we have a diverse representation and art, in all of its diversity, is spread and recognized throughout the city, she added. The ordinance changes will now lay the groundwork for future action, and if anybody has any ideas, please send them to us. Any recommendations by the Cultural Commission would have to come before the council to act on, City Community Development Director Bob Mart said. Under former Mayor Judy Markovitz, the city in 2000 purchased the former Scottish Rite Temple, now the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, for $210,000. To make it the focal point of a $19 million project to turn the area around the building at 600 Northeast Street into the city's cultural district. The Downtown Arts Commission was formed and was renamed in 2003 to the Cultural District Commission. The commission requested the latest name change and amending its powers and duties to expand its scope beyond the two-block BCPA area near downtown, to reflect having a wider impact and broader scope in the community. The changes also included reducing the number of commissioners from 14 to 11, who are appointed by the mayor to three-year terms with the consent of the council. While I am not opposed to this, I am wondering if this will take away resources for our downtown revitalization and the focus that we've had on downtown art, the BCPA, and all of that, said Ward 5 Alderman Joni Painter. Mart said he did not think so and that the changes would align with proposed modifications to the city's zoning ordinance to allow for more craftsman-type art in the city's warehouse district near downtown. In other action, the council unanimously approved a state-mandated resolution requiring local governments to pay prevailing wage rates for public projects and private commercial economic development projects supported by public funds, including projects supported by tax increment financing or tax incentives of any kind. The council also met Monday in a closed executive session, which was expected to include further consideration by the council of three finalists for city manager. No vote was taken Monday, and nothing was said publicly about when the council might make a decision. Washington City Administrator Jim Culotta, Decatur City Manager Tim Gleason, and interim Bloomington City Manager Steve Rasmussen fielded questions from the media and residents during a public forum last week. There are two photographs on this page, and the captions read, Uptown welcomes Special Olympians. Nick Bolin of Normal paints a friendly lion on the window of the Children's Discovery Museum in Uptown Normal Monday. The public was invited to paint welcoming messages to support Special Olympics athletes who will be arriving for the Summer Games Thursday through Saturday. Another photograph is captioned, Allison Meyer, Bloomington, a member of the SOAR softball team, paints a softball on the window of the Children's Discovery Museum in Uptown Normal Monday. SOAR members helped paint welcoming messages to Special Olympics athletes who will be competing Thursday through Saturday. Court monitor wants probe into treatment of inmates by Edith Brady Looney from Peoria. Reports of physical abuse of mentally ill inmates at Pontiac Correctional Center should be investigated by the state, according to a doctor's report on the state's compliance with a federal court settlement on prison mental health care. Although he did not find evidence of corporal punishment in records he examined from 18 prisons, Dr. Pablo Stewart found disturbing examples of inmates held in restraints, including one mentally ill man restrained since May 2017 at Stateville Prison, states his report. Stewart, the court-appointed monitor for a 2016 agreement reached in U.S. District Court for the Central District of Illinois, also noted, quote, the equally serious ongoing reports of physical abuse carried out by the custody staff on mentally ill offenders at Pontiac, unquote. Stewart said numerous inmates gave, quote, Very credible reports of abuse being carried out by the custody staff, especially in the mental health unit and on the North House. He called on IDOC to conduct a full-scale investigation of this abuse and report the results to the monitoring team, unquote. In a statement Monday, IDOC said abuse claims are taken seriously and referred for prosecution when appropriate. Improvements in staff training and new treatment units are among the improvements outlined in the report, said IDOC. The statement said, "We continue to make adjustments in our day-to-day operations that balance safety, security, and the needs of our mentally ill population," said the statement. The 177-page report follows a recent federal court injunction giving the state 90 days to correct widespread deficiencies in mental health treatment of prisoners. Chicago lawyer Alan Mills, part of the inmates' legal team, said the Pontiac allegations mirror claims he's heard during prison visits. Daily incidents of staff using pepper spray on mentally ill inmates and less frequent but more serious claims of beatings have been reported, he said. "My concern is that there are cameras there. I don't know why someone is looking at this," said Mills. Correction, "I don't know why someone isn't looking at this," said Mills. During 2 years of prison visits, including 7 to Pontiac, Stewart encountered hundreds of dedicated mental health staff, custody staff, and administrators, said the report. But he added, "It is a shame that the department allows the hard work and dedication of these staff to be sullied by a majority of individuals who have no business working in corrections." On the issue of staff conduct, Stewart also expressed concern for what he considers possible retaliation against mental health workers by Logan Correctional Center staff, who may be upset about the ever-increasing mental health focus of the facility, he wrote. Several cars parked at the facility near Lincoln were keyed between December 2016 and 2017, sparking an investigation in the summer of 2017. Stewart said he also will investigate a more recent incident involving alleged intimidation of a mental health staff member at Pontiac. "The stress of working with a growing number of mentally ill inmates has taken a toll on Pontiac staff," claimed Stewart. "The staff are in great need of therapy and support," said the report, while concluding, "The degree of stress that plagued the staff is no excuse for physical abuse." The ongoing staffing issues blamed for much of the state's noncompliance with 18 of 25 sections of the federal court agreement, leaving only three areas of compliance, should be reviewed based on a mental health caseload that now surpasses 12,000, said the report. Turning to the opinion page on A4 of the pantograph, our views, what others are saying. The Springfield State Journal Register says, "Are we sure we're still in Illinois? A state budget received widespread bipartisan support after rank-and-file lawmakers from both parties spent the past few weeks crafting a spending plan together. The budget compromise was approved with little rancor before the end of the regularly scheduled legislative session on May 31st. It includes no new tax increases or fees. The governor promised to quickly enact it. The new fiscal year that starts July 1 is poised to do so the way it's supposed to be done, with a budget in place. It's not a perfect budget, but it provides something Illinois hasn't had for the past several years, stability. Even if they don't like what they're set to receive, recipients of state funding can start planning because they know what they can expect to get for the next 12 months. From the Crystal Lake Northwest Herald, 14 government jurisdictions in Illinois, including Chicago, have adopted ordinances imposing the age 21 limit for the legal smoking age. This on top of laws that ban indoor smoking almost everywhere in the state, as well as policies keeping tobacco away from public schools. Yet those limitations aren't enough for some lawmakers. The 2008 indoor smoking ban did great things in the name of public health to limit the effects of that personal choice on people who don't want to be exposed to secondhand smoke, so much so that upping the legal age a decade later won't be able to have a demonstrable effect. We agree it's not wise to promote addiction, but allowing a behavior is not the same as promoting abuse of such behavior. To allow Illinoisans to begin their tobacco addictions at age 21 instead of age 18 reveals a larger concern for the taxes tobacco generates than the health of those who inhale. Existing conditions allow a city or a county to enact its own smoking ages or other more stringent rules that the state's already stern guidelines. Let us govern ourselves and determine the climate in our own communities. Well, thank you for allowing me to read the pantograph dated June 12, 2018. Again, my name is Mary Jo Harvey, and we will continue in the second half of the reading with the obituaries.